It's birthday bumps for the internet this week. It's turned 25. I wonder if it's going to have that quarter-life crisis I read about all the time. I was 15 years old when the net was invented by British computer scientist Sir Tim Berners-Lee. I was probably wearing a Wham t-shirt at the time when it was invented, when he came up with it. I'm kind of thinking about all the George Michael screensavers I could have downloaded if the internet existed when I was a teenager. A little part of me is glad that I didn't have to suffer through my youth in a time of Facebook, but really, like everybody else, I almost can't imagine my life without the internet. To reflect and explore on how the internet has changed us, I'm joined by Tom Chatfield. Tom is a British writer and commentator and author of five books exploring digital culture. The most recent, and I would really encourage everybody to read this because it's part of Alain de Botton's School of Life series. It's called How to Thrive in a Digital Age. Welcome to RN Drive, Tom.
Good morning, or good afternoon where you are, I guess.
It's evening, it's morning where you are.
Yeah, good evening.
Good evening. Now, I'm going to ask you, I was 15 when the internet was kind of invented. Do you remember your first encounter with the internet?
Well, I do, and I'd make a big distinction between the internet and the web, because the internet has been with us for a long time, since the 50s, and I remember, but it was all kind of military and shut off, and I remember in the early 90s, a friend of mine had something called a bulletin board,
bulletin boards, yes.
An ugly, difficult thing that you had to kind of ring up with a phone line to get in, and you would share, you know, sort of really geek stuff about programming and fantasy books and things. And that was the internet, and that was all kind of weird and esoteric and a kind of little boys thing in a bedroom. And then a few years later, in the mid-90s, I had my first experience of the web. And there was a computer, a shiny PC, with a thing called Mosaic, which was one of the very first web browsers. And I clicked on this, and it kind of brought up something that wasn't ugly and weird and geekish, you know, that was, by the standards of the day, beautiful and elegant, and took me to a thing called a website where you had words appearing, and like words that a normal person could look at and not be terrified by. I think the first site I looked at was probably one of the really, really early BBC News or Guardian newspaper sites. And so I remember thinking, you know, this is kind of crazy, because I could make one of these. I had no desire to run a bulletin board system or to do that kind of super geek early internet stuff. But the web, suddenly, this was something really different.
There's a tendency in the public, I hear it all the time in the research I do, to either think that the internet is the solution to every problem that we've got or the cause of every problem. There's an alarmism that happens, and there's a utopianism about what the internet can deliver for us. Do you think that that's a typical human response to technology, or do you think that there's just something about the internet, about its significance in our lives, which causes that kind of, that kind of extreme reaction?
I mean, you're absolutely right. There are these sort of strange and slightly distorting extremes, but I think it is a testament to the fact that this is a really big deal. You know, if you look at human history, the Industrial Revolution in the late 18th century, that really did change the course of human history. And I think in a different way, what people call the Information Revolution is having a similar change. You know, the idea that we now have one mobile phone for every one of the 7 billion humans on the planet, admittedly some have got more than others, that information is so freely available. It isn't the solution to every problem, and it isn't the cause to every problem, no way. But it is a really big deal. It is a really, really fast change, and it's one of those changes that's happened much faster than almost any other kind of technological spread. You know, we're here talking about, you know, sort of people in their 30s remembering, you know, the first time we ever used something that now connects more than half of the world's population. I'm talking about phones being in pockets that pretty soon will be able to access the internet from anywhere on the face of the earth. And so I think people, in a way, people naturally treat this like it is potentially the answer to everything. They want it to solve all their problems, or they want to demonize it, because they're trying to express how scary and strange it is to be caught up in a period of such rapid and profound transformation in certain bits of the human experience.
This is Rebecca Huntley on RN Drive. I'm talking to UK-based technology theorist and writer Tom Chatfield about the internet because it's turned 25 this week. One of the other things that's happened this week, Tom, is that we've heard from the internet's inventor, Sir Tim Berners-Lee, saying that we should have a Magna Carta for the internet. I want to get your response to that.
That's right. So, Sir Tim, back in 1989, he published this paper about the web, calling for a universal linked information system, and he did not make any money from it. You know, it spread partly because he decided, you know, not to try and make a great big fat profit from this. And he spoke this week about having a Magna Carta for the web. You know, this idea of a kind of charter that will hold governments to account, really. And I think, you know, it's an idealistic principle, and it's easy in a sense to say, well, that's not going to happen, is it? But actually, if you look at, there's a website at, I think, webwewant.org, which just sets out this idea that really, you know, using the net freely is becoming synonymous with an idea of being able to assert your human right, assert a right of free communication, of freedom of speech, of freedom of thought. These things we urgently want. And if enough people get together and put enough pressure on governments, we can begin to have some kind of charter that will, you know, try and continue to enshrine freedom and openness at the heart of the net. And I suppose, you know, I would like to think that this is not going to be true all over the world, sadly, but that there are places that are going to be able to pull back from the kind of brink we've got to recently in terms of surveillance and privacy, and, you know, begin to put a model out there of this as a place where, you know, people can be at their best, where people can try and enshrine these ideals, and where, yes, it is possible to hold governments to account, which, you know, which really hasn't happened at all so far.
While Tom's been talking, we've had some texts from audience members. We've had a wonderful one from Louise who said her first encounter with the internet was carefully copying down the address for the Louvre to look at the pictures. And I think that's what we all do. We do a little bit of armchair travel in the internet still. And then this other one I love from Kathy. She said, yes, remember my first web search for a job? I typed in the word job. It came straight back with head job. that's one of the strange gifts of the internet, you know, when you're deciding to type things up, you never know what's going to come back. Tom, I want to talk to you about the future of the internet. You read a lot of stuff about, you know, the internet of things, the internet of everything, you know, where it's going to go. Is it something that's going to be embedded in our clothes, embedded in every object that we use? I mean, what do you think is going to happen with the internet? And I think we can't talk about the next 25 years, but even thinking about the next 5 to 10.
Yeah, that's a nice big question. And I think it's partly to do with what people want. You know, you can say we can do all these things theoretically, but what drives technology is, you know, is what people want and what people are comfortable with. So I'm really interested to see where wearable tech goes, because undoubtedly this is a big deal. The idea of glasses like Google Glasses with cameras in, and also the idea of really, really good voice controlled stuff. So we're starting to get there with, you know, systems like Apple Siri. You sit in your car, your phone links with Bluetooth, you control it with your voice. And this is a really big deal if you think about it, because it means that we're moving away from the idea of looking at a screen and touching a screen and that whole kind of scrolling reading thing. And we're moving towards the idea of speaking of technology reacting to where you are, what room you're in, what situation you're in. And the question for me is, this is going to happen, but are people going to be comfortable with glasses? Are people going to really feel comfortable that a guy walking down the street might be filming me on his glasses? Or are we going to end up with something a bit more kind of boundaried and discreet, where, you know, you have your phone kind of powering a voice recognition system, or you have it on in your car, on in your office, on in the shops, but not on elsewhere? So, you know, I think we're going to end up in a wearable, kind of light, voice-activated world. But as to whether we're going to end up with, you know, everything everywhere, that may not be what people are comfortable with and what actually, you know, gets baked into the world we're living in.
Tom, thanks so much for joining. We could keep talking for another 20 minutes. And I've got to say, you're talking about privacy in the internet. I think that a lot of it's got to do with fashion and the internet too. I could never wear one of those Google glasses, not because of privacy, but fashion reasons. Thanks so much for joining us.
My great pleasure. Thank you.